Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Before we get into the main segment for this episode, I just have a few things I want to say. My wife Katie and I are living here in Beijing, China. We have been here for about 3 years, and Katie is a teacher, and she's just finishing up the school year now in 2017. This year ends at the end of June, and after that, we plan to go back home to the United States of America for a little while, and then we're going to take off, and we're going to travel for a year. We're both really excited about this opportunity. It's going to be awesome, and I plan to continue recording podcasts and updating my blog throughout the year, so stay tuned. I'm looking forward to that. My other big project is my book. I am finishing my second book, in fact. It's called 1,000 Days Between, Part 2. I'm trying to get my final draft out there, and within the next few months, I really want to put it all together so it's in your hands before we take off and begin to travel. Thanks for all of your support. It's been a really long project for me. It's about 8 years in the making. I know that sounds like forever, and it does to me too, trust me. It's been a really, really long journey, but we're nearing the end. So look for that this summer, 1,000 Days Between Part 2, and you can find updates for it on my website, 1000daysbetween.com. All right, let's get into the main segment of the show. My guest today is Sean Kelly. Sean is an art teacher here in Beijing, and you're going to notice that I'm talking with a lot of teachers on this podcast, and there's a good reason for that. It's just a numbers game. China is in high demand of qualified teachers, and there's a lot of great opportunities here. If you want to expand your teaching career internationally, I definitely would recommend looking into it. Katie and I have greatly enjoyed our time here in China, and 3 years has flown by in many ways. So, Sean is yet another expat teacher here. He, being an art teacher, he's a rather creative guy, so naturally we started talking about dystopian realities during our show. It took some interesting twists and turns. Sean has also lived in Shanghai, and he has lived in Costa Rica, so we talked about his former homes, we talked about his travel style. I had a lot of fun talking with Sean. He was a great guest. Let's get into it and listen to my conversation with Sean Kelly. Just going through the suburb, especially once you get out of the city, and before you get into the nice suburbs like out here, there's just all these old run-down like areas with giant garbage dumps and these construction workers just milling around, and it's just so gray and dirty today. It looks like a dystopia.
Yeah, I've heard that in this area between the 5th and 6th Ring Roads, it's like both the richest and the poorest in Beijing.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like there's the trash heap dystopia, but I also sometimes feel a bit like I'm in Blade Runner when it's super...
Yes, Blade Runner's a good one.
Like super, super smoggy, and then they have these huge LED screens, and all the people have like kind of funky fashion. Like
they need the umbrellas, though.
Yeah, they need the neon umbrellas.
Yeah,
for sure.
I wish they'd have those. Yeah. That'd be totally Blade Runner.
Yeah. But Shanghai definitely feels more Blade Runner than Liu Xiaozui. Like, because they have the huge, like, I don't know, the TV tower and stuff. And, like, they have walkways that are, you know, have all these LED lights that are zooming down, almost like Tron-esque. So that feels a bit more Blade Runner. But, yeah, I kind of expect that, like, synthy sound to come in every now and then, and just
such an awesome movie.
Yeah,
I guess they're making a new one.
I did not know that.
Yeah, like sets further into the future. Because the original Blade Runner is only supposed to be like 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah, I think it's 2018 Los Angeles.
2018, next year then. Huh. So that's what it's going to look like, folks.
I think. Fact checkers can do their thing.
Yeah, I've got to look at that later. And we'll put it in the show notes then.
Yeah.
But wow, did you see the different versions of Blade Runner? Or I have.
I actually, I don't know, I did a little film studies in school, and I did this one long-ass paper about, Philip K. Dick's writing versus the film adaptations, and so I saw a few of the different versions, because Ridley Scott just can't leave any of his work alone. He wants to shift it. I mean, honestly, though, it all blurs into my mind now because that was 10 years ago, but I don't think they make that huge of a difference.
Oh, okay.
I guess, there's, a bit of a difference with the... I think one of them doesn't have the weird bit at the end with the origami unicorn.
No, I can't even remember that.
I don't know. That, supposedly, shifts the whole dynamic of the movie. And I'm just kind of I don't know.
It's... Damn, I don't remember that. You sure you weren't on mushrooms or something?
It could have been. I don't know. It was college.
College, who knows?
Yeah. No mushrooms for me, though. You know, but other things.
I do remember, I think the one that I saw was the director's cut, I think they called it. But it wasn't the one that came out in the theaters originally. I never have seen that one. But I think I read about it, and they said, there was a voiceover that happened. And it was almost done in, a film noir style.
Yeah, the whole thing, actually, that was from a class that was, on neo-noir. So all kinds of films that Memento and LA Confidential and all these movies where they were kind of taking those sensibilities and, casting them in different settings or, yeah. So, I mean, you see that throughout the film, the smokiness and the spinning ceiling fans and all of the shades with the kind of gel lights coming in and.
Oh yeah. Just fantastic, the cinematography, the everything. I only watched it once, but I just remember just being blown away by it. The storyline, all the thoughts that went into it. Great movie.
But the book is better, and I like the title more. It's called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And that came out before the movie?
Yeah, a long time before.
Oh, I'm going to have to read it.
Yeah, it's really good. And he also is the one who wrote, Minority Report, that was originally a short story, and Total Recall, which is nothing like the movie, and...
Huh. What's the author's name?
Philip K. Dick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh, I'm going to have to read this. Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I was never, into sci-fi until I read his stuff, and now I, I don't know, watch, Star Trek and, things that are a little bit dorkier, but I was never, willing to stick my toe into the water until I read some of his books and really enjoyed it.
Sure. I mean, I'm terrified of AI, actually. In the last year, I've just been reading a lot about, the possibilities of, a strong AI or a, what do they call it, a super intelligence, and how it could overtake us. And, I mean, it is Terminator.
And if it's going to happen somewhere, it could happen easily in China because they're not afraid of, a lot of the, genetic modification and kind of sciency taboo that American scientists and lawmakers are terrified of.
There's less of that here.
So they're we're just gonna make a pig rat. Okay.
Why not?
It's not a problem.
Let's see.
Let's throw in some human eyeballs. It's all right. We can do that.
McMahon Bear Pig.
Mm.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Yeah. Whatever you want.
Might as well. If you're trying to disprove global warming, that's what you got to do, right?
But they could, also, make an animal that was, part cockroach, and it had, pangolin scales, and, everything that Chinese medicine, calls for and is, kind of, gross or on the endangered species list. Just turn it into one animal and then just consume it for dinner.
Just chain it up. It's just like a giant cockroach thing chained to the wall, and you pick different parts of it off depending on what's
exactly
what ails you.
That's like a universal doctor machine that you see in science fiction, but it's edible instead. We all thought it was just going to be a machine that you crawl into a little capsule, but in fact it's just this beast that you feast on little by little.
Yeah, and every family has one.
Yeah, of course.
You got to have, like, the chains in your basement.
Yeah, and it becomes a status symbol, and year by year it shifts, you know?
Oh, yeah, like, some years, like, the giant ones are in, some years, like, the pygmy ones.
You know, like, how they're, like, super into, like, Tibetan Mastiffs for 1 second, everybody in Hong Kong with the stamp-sized apartment, like, has this beast in their house, and then, you know, next year, no, we want to go for the mini model.
Now they're carrying their dogs with them. Mm-hmm. So you'll carry your cockroach in your arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Have it, like, in your pocket, like...
cockroach pangolin baby.
It'll be like the, you know, like the 5-year-old kid takes his frog to school in his sweatshirt and takes it out and pet the little cockroach.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a cough. A cockroach, give me a leg.
Hot water and pangolin scale.
Some wonderful ideas.
Yeah.
So the other dystopian movie that China really reminds me of is the movie Brazil.
Yes.
Sometimes, anyway.
Yeah.
Especially out here in Hoxhaiu, it's like I remember my first week here. I was trying to get to the market, like, but not by going all the way out to the main road and, like, walking twice as far as you need to. I was trying to get there, at, like, as the crow flies. And so I hopped over this, like, through this old playground, this creepy, like, you know, like, adult exercise area that's been abandoned and it's all gathering dust. And then over this, like, drainage ditch with, like, who knows what kind of, like, plutonium or whatever's in it. Try and jump over that and then up to a dirt road. And then on both sides of the dirt road were just these advertisements for, like, clean air and stuff. And I've got this picture with Katie of Katie standing next to this oxygen ad. And the air is super polluted that day.
Yeah.
It just totally reminds me of that scene in Brazil where he's driving outside of the city in his, like, one-man car. And there's these ads zooming by. And that's like how they get their nature. it's like looking at advertisements for nature.
But one part of Brazil that is less China and more South Korea would be, you know, how everybody gets, like, plastic surgery to the point that, like, your face just, like, one day falls off. Mm-hmm. They haven't quite gotten that extreme yet.
No, not quite that bad. I do remember being in South Korea and seeing, like, the newscasters, and their noses were, like, super thin, and their faces were almost glowing. Like, they didn't even look like humans. They looked like dolls.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know if they're just choosing the people with the best genetics or if it's all plastic
genetics
surgery.
Genetics don't matter anymore.
No. It's just... Everyone assumes they'll be, like, genetically engineering their kids and stuff. But, yeah, maybe they'll go the other way. We'll just keep the same genes and just modify our bodies with plastic surgery.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, I'm sure there are untapped endangered animals with, you know, some sort of appearance-enhancing qualities that we can add on to the beast.
Oh, yeah, the cockroach beast. Maybe it shouldn't be a cockroach. Maybe it should be, like, a giant fluffy bunny rabbit or something less scary. But anyway, yeah, you could just pick off some fur or something and rub it on your face and stay young.
Yeah.
That would do it.
Shave off some, like, unicorn horn. Include it in your, like, morning rice.
Horn. Yeah. I mean, if the if rhino horns are, like, $10,000 or whatever, imagine what a unicorn horn would cost.
I don't even know, but they can make it. Hmm. They can make it.
Maybe that's why you only see wild horses and not wild unicorns, because they've already cut the horns off, and they're really unicorns, but they want to, like, preserve the species.
Yeah.
So they purposely remove the horn.
That's very possible.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
What kind of coffee did you just make here?
I have no idea. Something that was on sale at the store, 2-for-1.
I'm getting some loopy thoughts here.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I may have not cleaned out that cup very well. There could be, you know, some kind of culture growing on. I don't know.
Maybe they dipped it in that nuclear waste drainage ditch before I came over here.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so what do you do here, Sean?
I am an art teacher, and so I work at a bilingual school, the same one as your wife. So that's how we know each other. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, I teach 3rd through 5th grade art. And, yeah, I mean, that's mostly what my life is.
What does that involve? I mean, I remember being a kid and, like, having the art teacher, but I don't remember what we did, honestly.
I mean, that involves, like, coming up with all different kinds of cool things that they can, you know, expand both with their imagination and creativity, but also at this age, like motor skills, you know, so you want to incorporate a lot of different kinds of things where they're using their hands in different ways. So you should have a little bit of sculpture and, you know, collage where, you know, for young kids, like there's still some kids who in third grade, like, you know, chop with scissors, like, you know, like their little crocodile mouths and just everything just looks ragged.
That was so, me. You know? I'm a lefty and like,
yeah,
I couldn't use the scissors. I had to like ask for the lefty scissors.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think those exist here.
They don't.
I've never seen a pair. We've asked for them before, but I don't think it exists.
Ah, growing up was horrible for me being a lefty because, like, for so many reasons. Like, oh, you're
first of all, you had to be like exercised. You know, you probably had like an evil demon in you.
Oh, that yeah. I'm a descendant of the devil for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a given.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows that, but. You know, beyond that, it's like the teacher would teach the class, like, here's how you write an A. If you're left-handed, just do it backwards.
Yeah.
But everyone else who's not left-handed, here's how you write an A. Oh, you want your scissors? Oh, let me see if I can run over to Kohl's and buy you a pair of lefty scissors.
Yeah. I didn't know Kohl's was, like, the supply store for scissors these days. I don't know.
Huh. Maybe I should have said
Michael's
Staples.
Or Ben Franklin. Yeah.
Yeah, one of those.
Staples.
I guess I'm not so up on my big box store lingo these days.
No, you're losing all of that American knowledge slowly.
It happens.
Surely.
Yeah, you move away and you start forgetting things.
Yep. Yep.
And then you come home and it's weird. It's like everything that was there, but when you left, is still there. But you're like, huh, I don't remember this being here.
Yeah, and you, in terms of, like, the big box stores, like, you forget how much time you waste, like, walking through these massive stores. Like, it's so much easier to just, like, hop into the little store on the street that is, like, very specific about what it sells. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, like, when I'm, whenever something breaks in our apartment, which is pretty much weekly. Like,
yeah.
Like, the hose leading up to the shower head just broke. It's just spraying water all over. So I'll just like grab that, take the hose off, run it over to the little local hardware store, hold it up to the guy because I don't know how to say it in Chinese.
Well, and also you have to show it to them or know the word because you will never find it in those stores.
Oh, like, you
the
can't
hardware
just, like,
stores
dig around
are like that. No, they're total insanity.
But that's the beauty of it. There's no way you'll ever dig through it all, but you just like hold up the hose and they're like, oh yeah, I know that. And
yeah, there you go.
Just come back with it and they're like, oh, you want an expensive
somehow,
one or a cheap one?
Yeah, they know the they've got some kind of logic to the madness.
It's unreal. It's almost like a improv game or something where they'll just reach down
and there it is.
And they've just got it.
There it is.
It doesn't matter what you walk in there with.
Yeah. They got it. They got it all somewhere stored in those heaps of dusty, rusty, like, I don't know. Somewhere. They've got it.
They've definitely got it. I don't know how they do it. I mean, I guess it's because that's their shop, which it's their life, you know?
Yeah, like, they just hang out there all day long.
Yeah.
You know, most of those places, at least, you know, like where I live out here now, you don't really come into those stores very much, but in Shanghai it was like always the same person there.
Like, yeah, it's like the owner.
Yeah, and then a lot of times they slept in the back or, you know, like you would see them at a certain point, everybody would just be like huddled around a little table eating dinner.
Yeah.
And you gotta have a TV.
Yes, or like nowadays
or crochet.
Phone.
Yeah.
People are always watching movies on their phones.
Yeah.
I remember watching this movie where this I can't remember the exact plot, but it's like this kid from the ghetto goes and like learns karate or something. Not the Karate Kid, but some other similar thing. And he walks into like the studio where he's going to learn some martial arts. And he notices behind the curtain, there's like the studio and then behind the curtain, there's a bed. And he realizes like the guy who owns it sleeps there. And it didn't even occur to me until like after that I'd seen the whole movie. Oh, that was supposed to indicate that he's poor or something. Or like,
yeah.
That he's this weird guy. Because to me, it was just like, yeah, he lives there.
Yeah, duh.
Like, of course.
No, duh.
Every person lives where they work.
Yeah. Just pull the curtain and there you go.
Yeah.
Now it's bedtime.
Yeah. Hmm. So do you miss Shanghai?
In some ways, yeah. I mean, I think, well, at least, like, my life there where I was, it was way more convenient. I think, like, the layout of the city is a little bit better in terms of getting around. Like,
oh, it is.
The subway lines are way closer together, and, like, I don't know. I find, like, in Beijing that there are some, like, deserts of stores. Like, there will just be deserts of convenience stores, and you can walk blocks and blocks, and it doesn't seem like there's anything
that's true.
There.
Well, I know. You know how you find one? You just have to need something.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as you need it, you can't find it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I found, like, in Shanghai, it's almost, like, comical how it's just, like, everything is repeated, like, goes on forever and ever. And you turn down one street, and there's these three stores, and you turn down the next street, and it's the exact same thing. And there's, like, you know, it does seem a little monotonous there at times because of that. And, like, you know, you can definitely feel like you've gone to another place in the city, and it's not really that different.
Yeah.
But it's so convenient.
It's true. Well, from my apartment that I live in now, there's a bunch of little restaurants near it. And whenever I want to go out for lunch, I'm like, where do I want to eat? And there's like the five that I normally go to. I switch it up and I'm like, maybe I should walk further and, you know, go to somewhere new this time. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm just going to see the same thing repeating again.
Right.
Eventually. Unless if I want to go to like a really nice place, but I just, you know, I just want a quick lunch.
Yeah. But I do think like in Beijing that there are more layers to it than Shanghai. Like Shanghai is just so new.
Yeah.
That, like, everything is kind of, like, built for what it's supposed to be now, and because there's just been, like, so much new construction, and it's grown so fast, and, you know, there isn't, like, the history there to the same degree. So, you know, things are all purpose-built, whereas Beijing, like, you have so many of the hutongs and stuff, and just stuff is, like, crammed in. Like,
yeah.
You know, just everything is a little more jerry-rigged to fit whatever the current situation is. It's not like, oh, okay, we're going to build this new mega mall and everything fits in. We definitely do have that here.
Especially, like, out in the suburbs.
Yeah, like, yeah.
God, just since I moved, like, I've been here about not quite 3 years now. And the Shine Hills, that was just a field when we moved here. Now it's this gigantic mall.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it actually, when my parents came last, I guess, not last October, but the October before, like, you know, that particular shopping mall is almost exactly like the shopping mall that was built 10 years ago near my parents' house, where it's meant to look like a fake town.
Ah.
You know, like, every little store has its own kind of architectural differences, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like this indoor, like, weird marble palace with fake palm trees, you know, like that you'd see before, you know, in the 80s. But yeah, I mean, they were like, this is just like Short Pump Town Center.
Huh.
Like, and I mean, it kind of is. Like,
well, that's kind of the appeal of a mall, I guess, or like the, maybe the developer of the mall, like, can save money by just making a mall look like that. And
well, perhaps. I don't know. I think, like, in the United States, at least, like, a lot of the motivation for that is that, you know, people feel like, oh, all these big box stores is making the small towns disappear and the main street feeling and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And, like, so we're going to, like, make this mall feel like you're on Main Street.
Yeah,
I think that's,
okay.
Like, I think that's a part of that, at least. Like, here, I'm not exactly sure why it's taken off that way.
Hmm.
And like an open air mall is not nearly as appealing in Beijing.
Oh yeah.
Like as in, you know, like somewhere where it's a little bit warmer and the air is nice, you know. Like, so, but yeah, I mean, I feel like that kind of thing has taken off. And I, you know, a lot of things that are not necessarily practical, but like have a whiff of Western to them.
Yeah, I think that's
like,
it.
Like, yeah.
What's it like to be in America?
Yeah.
Oh, come to this mall and find out.
Yeah. I mean, and the architecture of it does look kind of more American style, but
yeah.
They do have, like, on a lot of the buildings, this sort of like metal exoskeleton. Like, you don't ever really see that in the States, where it's like just a box building, but they try to make it with the lights and the metal exoskeleton seem a little bit more interesting.
Huh, I'm going to have to look for that.
Or they, you know, put like fake plants going up the side of the wall, or like, I mean, I actually really liked the real thing in Shanghai. They had all these like walls that were just patterns made of cabbages, and they were actually real cabbages.
Oh yeah.
I don't know why like
vertical gardening.
Yeah, vertical, but nobody like actually ever eats it, but it's all made of cabbages, which we don't really think of as a decorative plant, but it looks cool.
They're rabbits, like they're exo or they're futuristic rabbits.
It could be.
Huh. Yeah. I do like it when
that can climb up walls.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're rabbits. And they've got laser
gravity-defying. Yeah, they've got, like, space boots on, so they can just, like, climb up side walls. It's all good.
Then you just pick one off when you need it. You have a little cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like it when there's a lot of vegetation, though, on in buildings. And but then, I don't know, we have a lot of plants in our apartment, and now that we have plants, I like to look at plants. It's like when you know, when you have a kid, you notice all the other people with kids probably, and when you buy a Prius, you notice all the Priuses. And now I notice all the plants, and even in this room, there's this plant that, like, we used to have one like that, and it probably gets like no sunlight ever, and somehow it still is alive.
Yeah, and like I don't take care of it at all. Like we're in my art room right now, not at my home. I can't have any plants in my home because they just get eaten and dug up by my cat. But here, it's nice. I've got a couple of these little tree things, and some gardening company is responsible for them. So they come and water them. And
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but they don't get a terrible amount of sunlight, but they do all right.
Huh. We we had one that looked like this but smaller, and then went away for the summer, and we had somebody else living in the apartment, and came back in and it just had the tree trunk and no leaves on it. I'm like, that plant is dead. And she's like, no, I think the leaves just fell off. I think they'll grow back in the spring. I don't think it
probably
works like that.
Probably not. Yeah.
I think this is like an evergreen equivalent.
Yeah. No, that's false.
But then I noticed they put a lot of fake plants in buildings here too. And maybe it's just something I noticed. Maybe it's like they have that at home too, and I just never noticed. I don't know.
Right, or in, you know, how they always like separate off the roads so you can't jaywalk with those metal fences. Like sometimes they've got the baskets and they pick like the brightest fake flowers they can find and like plop them in there. I can't really say plant. Just plop them in.
I guess you can't plant a fake plant.
Yeah. Huh. But that's one thing that's interesting, you know, in Chinese culture is that like nature seems so revered in some ways, like, you know, all their art and literature, like, and how some mountains are considered, you know, very spiritual. And
so there's like five sacred mountains, I think.
Yeah, and like you see everywhere, like, you know, rainbow drawings and like drawings of plants and cutesy things like on billboards and stuff, and then all these fake flowers. But then like the environment actually is totally wrecked.
Yeah,
not every day, but like it'll be this like really smoggy day, and then you look down a street and it has like neon rainbows that are like going down and crossing over from one side to the other, and like I don't know, just the juxtaposition of that is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's like the Brazil thing where it's like here's what nature might look like if we actually had it, because we had it destroyed it all.
Yeah.
But paradoxically, it's like today, I don't think I saw one blade of actual grass. But sometimes I can walk around and there's giant parks in Beijing. It's a really green city.
Yeah.
And when it's not polluted here, it's actually quite beautiful.
Yeah.
They do a good job with it. I mean, it's different. Like, you're not allowed to walk on the grass usually.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre to me. I remember I was in Shanghai once and I was in a park. And because I don't live there, I was just visiting. I just didn't have anywhere to go take a nap, and I was tired, so I just like lay down in the grass, took a nap, and like 2 minutes later, this cop came and like shook me awake. And
nope, said, not allowed.
Get off the grass.
Get off the grass.
Go take a nap on that bench.
But I mean, like, they wouldn't have any grass with so many people in there if they didn't kind of like try to protect it at least, I guess.
That's true.
Just sit on a bench and gaze at the big spherical, like, plastic flower globe. You know what I'm talking about? I must have just, like, made a whole bunch of them and put them all over China, because there's one over here, and then I've seen them in other big parks and intersections.
Hmm. Yeah, those... I know what you mean. We were in, a Yunnan province recently, mm-hmm. in a city called Reili, and it's, like, right on the border with Myanmar. And there's a lot of, man, I'm so bad with these like minerals and stuff. I think it was jade is from there, but it might have been some other stone. And so we went to this market and we thought it was going to be some big park. It kind of looked like it from the outside. And it turned out to just be this giant place where they sold all this like jade or whatever crap it is. We didn't even want to look at it because everything's like 10,000 kwai and up.
Right.
Like a bracelet.
And, like, our eyes cannot decipher what is real or not, even if you wanted to drop that kind of cash.
Right, and, like, I have no idea. There's absolutely no way I would even figure it all out. Anyway, on outside of there was this giant sphere of stones, and it's perfect sphere, and sitting inside of a, like, water fountain. And so it was spinning, like, naturally from the water, like, kind of bubbling up underneath it. Mm-hmm. And you could come up and touch it and, like, play with it like it's a... like a crystal ball or something, like you're on the Wizard of Oz. It was really, that was really cool. That was not for sale, but it drew in my attention for sure.
Yeah,
I like that kind of stuff. Do you like living in a suburb? Let's talk about that, like versus a city.
No, I mean, I'm just lazy and don't want to commute. So I like to roll out of bed and then here I am. You know, which I think like is something that, I don't know, I really value it. I don't like in the United States how everything a lot of times is so spread out and you have to drive. Mm. And like, I guess I just got even lazier and was just like, why? You know, I don't have just like a bed behind a curtain in my art room, but like it's only like 100 steps away. So
Might as well be.
Yeah.
I lived here our first year in the same building. And it was literally like, open up the curtains and you could see the school.
Yeah, and you can hear the bells, the class bells, sometimes.
During the day, I could hear the kids playing and the gym teacher.
And if you have like a sick day and you're at home, it really feels like you're playing hooky because you're hearing like the kids everywhere. And, you know, it's like you don't really feel like you can fully get away from it. And then on the weekends, you have the guards doing their military drills and like, ER-san.
Yeah, that's always... That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
We happen to live right next to the headquarters of the biggest oil company in China. And so there's an entire police department dedicated just to guarding that building. And every day before their shift starts, there's like 8 guards standing in a row and they're all doing drills and like marching back and forth and kind of going over their routine for the day, I'm guessing.
Yeah. But you even see that here, not with like... things that are even somewhat militaristic. You know, like, you'll see, like, restaurant workers all lining up in the front, like, you know, before the shift starts, and they're all required to, like, say some things or, like, do some kind of movements together. And, like, sometimes it feels, like, kind of cute and teamworky, but I don't know. I don't know how well that would fly in the States. Like, I think everybody would just sit there and roll their eyes and, like, I don't know. It would be something...
Yeah, as long as you're on the clock.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I wonder what they're talking about. Do you know?
No idea.
Huh.
No idea.
I mean, it's kind of, it just seems bizarre. Like, maybe it's just like, oh, today we're going to serve some food. And we're going to have some
customers. Like, you have shift meetings and stuff, like, especially at nicer restaurants, like, before you get started, you know, and they'll, like, say, here's what the specials are, and, like, try to push this wine today because we have a lot of extra. But it's not like... let's all stand in a line formally and look straight ahead. And, you know, they have like really serious meetings sometimes like that. But then you also see like, I don't know if it's intended as a team building thing, but like dancing around to some song, like.
Oh, you've seen that in China?
Some kind of number. Yeah. Huh. Even at like Ola, that like store that's kind of like a, a houseware store, like a more expensive IKEA.
Oh, okay.
Like, I've seen them, like, they did some kind of, like, dance in the aisles. And, like, it seemed like it was clearly for themselves. Like, they weren't doing it, like, for the customers, but it was something to try to, like, unify them together or something. I really don't know.
Huh. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be, like, for a performance, at least the ones I've seen. It's,
yeah.
It, like, they don't necessarily care if anyone's watching or not.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
They didn't wait for an audience or expect applause. They just, like, you know, were throwing their arms around and dancing and... No idea what it was about.
So speaking of IKEA, I went there, or I've been there a few times, and in Beijing, and I've never been to one outside of Beijing, only the one, because I've heard about this store like at home and really didn't know what it was all about. And it's kind of bizarre. Like, I imagine IKEA in Beijing probably looks identical to IKEA anywhere, but like everyone in this Chinese. And it's another one of these weird things where I just kind of thought sleeping on couches in IKEA and on beds was just like normal. Like, because in the
I have been to IKEA outside of China. It is not normal.
Yeah, in China, it's like if there's an empty bed in IKEA with no one sleeping on it, you got to take that bed and take a nap.
You got to just, I mean, you really see what it's like to live in that room.
Yeah, yeah, you got to figure it out.
Get
for
a feeling,
yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, and try to just like zone out the throngs of people pushing by. Like, you can just say like, "Oh yes, this is quite a nice view to my like mass-produced wall art."
Yeah,
and you know, this is a moderately comfortable bed. Like, I'll consider this.
This is slightly softer than a brick wall. I mean, yeah, this bed is pretty nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Chinese beds are pretty hard.
But, like, the cafeteria there is just, like, total madness. And everybody, like, you know, I mean, with Western food, usually we'll have, like, one plate that has, like, a little bit of everything on it. And, like, the IKEA menu items, like, still are like that. You know, if you get, like, the meatballs, then you end up with the mashed potatoes and your lingonberry sauce and everything. Or if you get the salmon, then it'll have some, like, vegetables and whatnot. But, like, you know, just the Chinese mentality that, like, you don't ever have, like, one plate. Even if there's lots of things on that plate means that, like, I'll see people just going with two trays. And they just load up. And I guess it's, like, cheap for Western food, so.
It is, man. I haven't been there in a while. I'm going to have to go back just to eat.
Yeah,
I
mean.
Drink coffee.
I'll just, like, I took my boyfriend there recently, and he just got, like, three different. Like plates, menu items.
Oh, he did the same.
Yeah.
And he's Chinese too.
And they also always have like little extra add-ons at the end, like chicken wings or prawns or something. You know, can get everything.
Yeah, I grabbed a couple of those. The what are they called? The crawfish.
Yeah.
Crayfish.
Yeah, crawfish, crayfish, crawdaddies.
Yeah, those ones. I grabbed a couple just because I'm like, you know what? I haven't had these in China. Why not? Just they're like 3 kwai each. Just
but there's so many of those places on your street. I'm surprised that you haven't.
I know, but it's like they just seem like such formal big places and I don't know.
Well, I mean, like in America, like a lot of people, it's like kind of like a lowly food, but here they're quite expensive.
Yeah, and it's expensive, and you don't get much food out of it. Like, I don't mind eating one or two of them just to kind of see what they taste like.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a lot of work for a meal.
But in the summer in Shanghai, you can get, like, a ton of them for cheap. Like, just, like, on the street. I don't know. Here, yeah, it seems like they're a lot nicer. I don't know
street
if it's
food.
Just you can get them more easy there. But
you just buy a normal
I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with eating those to a degree because they are the kind of fish that just, like, soaks up everything.
Oh, like all
in
the
water. Yeah, so, and if they're, like, at least mildly local, like, I don't know.
What are you talking about, man? China doesn't have any polluted water.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, that is scary to think about, eating any kind of seafood or anything that comes from the water. Or, God, even eating chicken. Like, I've seen chickens here, what they eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw a chicken just picking styrofoam off of a cooler, like, last week.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, that's what I'm eating when I eat a chicken? Styrofoam?
That's what you're eating. But, I mean, if you get fish from, like, any ocean in the world, you're going to have some plastic involved, so.
Oh, that's true. Oh, I know. It's scary to think about. I mean, sometimes with food, it's best just not to... not to think about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think in China, there's so many different things. And I think we're more aware of it because we hear about scandals or things that are really egregious, like Gutter Oil. But I mean, most of the factory farm stuff you have in the United States, or like,
oh yeah,
you know, stuff that's grown on these mega farms, produce with all the pesticides and stuff. It's not really maybe that much better, but I don't know. There's something particularly objectionable about like going around and like, I don't know. I think like a child who grows up in one of these big cities here wouldn't even. They'd say, like, why is the water so clear? If they went somewhere, like,
they'd have no idea.
You know?
Why is the sky blue? That's weird.
Water's supposed to be milky and a bright color, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I have noticed a lot of the stuff that is unsightly here. It's just, like, we have the same stuff in the States. We just hide it better.
Yeah.
You know, like, we have trash. It's just in a dump.
Yeah.
And sometimes here it's on the street. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's far from the dirtiest country I've ever been to.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, just the masses of street cleaners.
Yeah, within the city of Beijing, there's just people sweeping up all the time, and it's actually pretty spotless.
Yeah.
But as soon as you get outside, with a
layer of soot all over everything. But, yeah, not a lot of just, like, loose trash flying around.
No, not so much. I mean, I was in India, like, last summer, and I've never been to such a dirty country in general. It's just trash everywhere.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No, part of it draws me, but part of it, I don't know. I've gotten food poisoning a few times in other places, and I've heard that that's like...
Well, that's just a given there. I
mean, yeah.
Part of the course.
I don't know. I have to load up on my charcoal pills or something. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I love the food, but
Indian food is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know. I think I might go for, like, India Light and head to Sri Lanka.
Oh, okay. I haven't been there. Now, is that kind of how people see it?
Yeah, you know, it's, like, it's not quite as crowded and as dirty, but you have, like, a taste of something that's, like, similar to, you know, the mainland Indian culture, and there's more, like, nice natural spots, and you can do some good scuba diving there.
Huh, I'll have to go. I'll have to, yeah, definitely want to check it out. It's on the radar.
Yeah.
Is that a majority Muslim country or is it Hindu? Yeah. I'll have to look it up later.
I mean, I might be an American living abroad, but I'm still not like that great with my
geography and all the religion
and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, just the moment you like step off the plane in India, you're just hit with this diversity of religion and culture just everywhere. It's unbelievable. Like Hindus dress like so in such bright colors and stuff, you know. Then you got the Sikhs with the turbans and the giant beards and just really, really interesting people. And then there's Muslim sections, and so India is just like a really diverse place, especially when you're coming from China, where like almost everyone's Chinese.
Yeah. That's one thing that, I don't know, when I was moving to Shanghai, everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's so international, blah, 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 blah. But, like, if you're even at a mid-sized city in the United States, you know, like,
oh yeah,
you see like, people of all different walks of life and, you know, from all different kinds of backgrounds. And, like, I don't know. But there's something, I don't know, it's weird. Like, when I go home and I'm just, like, around such a mix of people, I still, like, am astounded at how many, like, white people there are. And just, like, white people everywhere. And I can understand everything they're saying. And, like, I don't know, there's something, like, weirdly comforting, like, coming back and just, like, I don't know. I think you just get used to, like, seeing different kinds of things and different kinds of people and different kinds of food. And, like, that's when I realized that I am starting to think of China, like, as home. Because, I don't know, it's weird. It's comforting to come back and, like, I don't know. It's weird.
How long have you been in China?
For, I guess,
wow,
almost 5 years.
Oh,
almost
okay.
5 years. That's yeah, Shanghai was, like, almost 3 years when I lived there.
Yeah, no, so, like, every time I go home, there's, like, something new that I that I notice that I never noticed before, or just I just think it's weird. And like once I remember it was the big box stores. Actually, it was like the giant signs. Like I don't know. For some reason it just struck me as like, wow, that's weird. That Walmart sign is so huge. And look at that McDonald's. Those arches.
Yeah.
Has that always been there that big? Like, why do they need such a big sign? Like,
yeah.
Everybody knows what it looks like.
Yep.
And then another time, though, like last time I was in Chicago, and it was like, oh, all these people around me, they're all speaking English.
Yeah.
I understand everything they're saying.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. And that's part of the reason why I almost like don't want to be able to understand Chinese amazingly is that like I can just turn my ears off and just turn all language around me into white noise. And, you know, when I go back to the States and I can understand everybody's banal conversations, I just like, ugh. I can't tune it out anymore. I've like lost my ability to tune it out because like almost now my ears are tuned up for anywhere that I hear English. I'm like, English?
Oh,
English,
yeah, for English. Sure.
You know?
But I get that way when I hear Chinese too.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not necessarily understanding every word now, but like, I'm like, oh, Chinese.
Pick up
oh.
little bits of it yeah. here and there. Yeah, I mean, when I go home and I hear Chinese, I like it stands out to me. Yeah. But when I'm here, English definitely stands out more. But one thing that like the last time I went home that drove me nuts is like if I wanted to get a bottle of water somewhere, like there weren't any bottles of water on the shelf that weren't cold. And it was freezing outside,
but
everything was still in the fridge. You couldn't get a room temperature drink.
And here it's the opposite. Like, they won't drink cold water here.
Right. They like still, like, keep the drinks in the winter in refrigerators, but they just turn them off and maybe have, like, one thing.
Maybe. And they'll even be in like, the 7-Elevens, like, a refrigerator, but it keeps things warm.
Right. Yeah, like canned coffee drinks and whatnot, or yeah, soy drinks.
Not like boiling hot, but just a little warm.
Yeah.
It's interesting. When I first moved here, I was like, I kind of had some anxiety over it. It's like, there's no cold water here.
Yeah.
You can't go to a restaurant and get cold water.
Or just not being able to drink water out of the sink. Like, I constantly was in persistent fear of being dehydrated. So anytime, like, I would see a water cooler, I would just, like, drink so much water. And I think, like, I did sometimes get dehydrated because I couldn't just, like, go up to a water fountain or the sink or, you know. I still haven't gotten used to, like, carrying around a water bottle. I always like lose them, or it just doesn't work for me.
Hmm.
And I still have not adopted the Chinese custom of always having my own toilet paper.
Oh, right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
being just, guys, like, we can get away with that
yeah,
a little longer,
most of the know? Time. And then, like, but when nature women, calls man. In a different way, you've got to, like, ask your closest female friend for help.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I have been here kind of a long time now, or I'm pretty used to it now, because when I walk into a Hutong toilet and there's like three guys taking a shit like all next to each other, all on their phones. And
yeah,
like,
or no doors, well,
it's
phone.
Weird.
That would be like just mild multitasking. Like,
yeah.
I love it when it's like, you know, a newspaper open between two hands and one of those hands also has a cigarette in it, and like,
yeah,
you know, just like chilling there, talking to your homies, taking a dump.
Yeah.
No big deal.
And there's zero shame in it. It's like,
yeah.
And they'll just squat there for like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
taking a crap.
Yeah. I
not that
started
I'm watching
doing. Yeah.
Minutes.
Yeah. You're like timing them in there.
I gotta stop watching.
Yeah. I mean, I started doing CrossFit here a few months ago, and like that. I don't know how familiar you are with CrossFit, but there's so many movements and things that involve squats, and like, I don't know. I mean,
it doesn't tempt you to like just pinch one out.
Like, this sounds crazy, but I think I've only used a squat toilet like 6 or 7 times in the whole time I've been in China.
It's like twice a year.
I totally avoid it. But like, you know, I did my foundation group. When you first start, you have to take classes to like learn all the movements and stuff. And the instructor just like could not understand why I couldn't do like a squat properly. And I'm like, It supposedly takes 10,000 times to be able to do something like a master, and they seriously are way further along than I am in this regard, just from everyday life.
Yeah.
So give me a little break.
Like,
I'm
how many days old are they? Like, that's how many times they squat. And if they're a girl, like, multiply that by 5.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, what is it? You're supposed to keep your feet flat?
Yeah, keep your feet flat, and your knees aren't really supposed to go forward at all. Like,
kind of jut outward, or
you don't want your knees to jut outward. You want to, like, kind of just sit back and keep your back straight and your chest up. And you know, I would always use my knees just to go forward, and you know, just get shouted at.
Well, another thing is, like, people have an aversion to sitting on the ground here.
Yeah.
Especially, like, outside.
Yeah.
And so you'll see guys just, like, not taking a crap, just, like, squatting on the street. Just hanging out, just squatting.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are certain things where people are, like, super neat freaks. Like, you know, I don't really care if I get some dust on the bottom of my pants, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Or, like, if my backpack touches the ground. But, like, I am weird about, like, other things with cleanliness, you know? Like, I can't believe how many bathrooms, like, don't have soap or, you know, like, things like that. But I don't really have any problem putting my backpack on the floor. I don't need an extra chair at my table at a restaurant to put my bag on.
Oh, they'll freak out. You put your backpack on the floor, they're like, oh, no, sir, don't, no, let me get you a chair for your backpack.
Yeah. Or a little stool or something.
Yeah.
I feel like there's got to be some kind of solution to that that's better that nobody has come up with yet. Because
like
there's so
the
much...
Or...
Yeah, I mean, there's so much, like, space used up by people, you know, like, two people sitting at a four-person table because they need, like, things for their coats and their bags.
Right. And it's so, like other aspects of Chinese culture, that would just not be cool at all. Like,
yeah.
Like I was reading about, like, the... What's they call it? Man spreading? In like New York on the subway, like these dudes will take up like 2 seats and spread out their legs as far as they can. And you never would see that in China.
Yeah, I've only seen it like once or twice, but then like people will come onto the train and for the most part, people will begrudgingly move.
Yeah. I mean, you might take up 2 seats if there's enough seats.
Right. It's not like what you see.
No, you get one
for
seat.
For sure. Yeah.
Yet in a restaurant, you can have 2. You can have one for your backpack.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe the hook thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they could just have like...
Locker system or...
I was going to say like toddlers, like just to hold your pack.
Yeah.
Like, you know, each restaurant has like 20 little kids. Like, here, hold this pack. I'll give you a cookie.
I don't know. Hmm. There are options.
Well, it's China.
Yeah. You know, figure it out.
Yeah, you can do something. So what else? How long are you going to stay in China?
At least 2 more years, because I have a new contract.
You excited about that?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, there's a lot of things left that I want to do here, and, you know, I don't really know what I'll do after this. I kind of don't like to plan too far ahead so I can be open to other opportunities. But... Yeah, I mean, for right now, I'm pretty happy with it. There are things that I would definitely look for in living in a new place that would be the opposite of what Beijing is. I want a place probably that's doesn't get quite so cold in the winter and that has cleaner air.
Have you been to Yunnan?
No, I have not. I actually haven't been anywhere south of Shanghai. All my traveling in China has been... like pretty much Shanghai or north.
Staying north of the Mason-Dixon line?
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, I mean, I think like Hong Kong and a lot of places in southern China, I still need to go and explore. I don't feel like I can live in China for like 5 years and not, you know, go to some of these places. But I always don't want to go to another big city when it's vacation time. So I think I'm more likely to hit Yunnan soon.
Yeah. Yeah, like when you start thinking of Hong Kong as like a small town compared with Shanghai.
Yeah.
It's like, it's still pretty big. And,
But you can hike there, allegedly.
Yeah. I was only in Hong Kong for a few days, but yeah, it's cool. The middle of the island has all these giant hills, and so you can hike to the top. And it's pretty well developed for hiking, actually. And I guess there's like little islands outside that have like parks and stuff, and
yeah,
a lot of hiking and little villages. It's a lot bigger territory than I thought originally. I thought it was just this tiny little thing, and it's actually more substantial.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly like know so little about it, but I always hear that people have such a good time, so it's got to happen.
It's cool. Got to happen. It's so much more westernized, though.
Yeah.
It's like, when you miss seeing white people, you know, like you're talking about before, you're like,
yeah,
you go to Hong Kong, you'll see a lot more.
Yeah. And I heard that people actually, like, you know, don't just like stop on the escalator, or like there people stand to the right,
like they're
and
courteous
walk on
and
the
stuff?
Left. Yeah, I've heard that it's like a little bit more organized, and that people are a little bit more spatially aware.
Yeah,
which I think
British
they have to be
them.
Because they, you know, it's like way more people crammed into a smaller space. I mean, but
it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems that way to me. And then there's Macau is there too.
Yeah, and go gamble a little bit.
Sure, there's the casinos, there's...
Which actually now more money goes through there in terms of gambling than Las Vegas.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's like gone down a bit because of like anti-corruption campaigns. So like, I don't know, I guess like big government people are afraid of splashing money around, and
so the baccarat tables are empty these
days. Yeah. I don't even know what like other Chinese gambling, like what their big games are, but I know that they have like some kinds of games that we don't. But whenever I go to a casino, I just play slots anyway. Make your money last longer.
Well, it depends on what slots you play.
That's true. Yeah. Penny slots.
Yeah, those are cool.
You know, jiao slots.
It's like one ten.
Or I would like the fen slots. Yeah.
The what slot?
Fen
is
it's like a breakdown from jiao, like even less. But you don't even have those coins and stuff anymore. It's
really, I heard about those.
Yeah.
So in China, there's like the yuan is their currency, and that's how much are those worth now? Like 15 cents maybe for one?
Yeah, it's like 1/7 of a dollar.
Okay.
Then jiao is like 1/10 of a yuan.
Yeah, so
and
one
then fen
be...
is 1/10 of...
Of a jiao?
Yeah.
Oh, so those are worthless.
Yeah.
So jiao is worth like one
so
and
So if
half
you thought
cents.
Of if you thought of like yuan as a dollar, which it's not, then like a jiao would be 10 cents and fen would be 1 cent.
Yeah.
And in digital currency you still have fen.
Oh, okay. That
like,
makes sense.
But, like, you know, because you'll see prices, especially on Taobao, like, it'll be a really low price, but it'll still be, like, 6.78 or something like that.
Yeah, because that little extra makes a difference when you order, like, 50,000.
Right.
I mean, it's like the stock market, like the New York Stock Exchange, like, a stock will be worth $67.35742.
Yeah.
Like, wait, who uses those small things? But I guess if you're trading a million shares, and that's maybe like $100 extra
right.
or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the first time I thought about that was, wasn't it an office space where they like made it like round off, and whatever was rounded off went into their bank account?
Like
and
Superman
so, like,
too.
Yeah, it just like, it doesn't seem like that much money, but I guess it adds up when you're doing lots and lots of transactions.
Yeah, especially when you do the computer program wrong and suddenly you made like $10 million in a day or whatever it was that they did in that movie. It's funny to think about. With gambling, I remember seeing this movie called To Live. In English, it's called To Live, and it's a Chinese movie. And at the beginning, it's like before the revolution happened, or maybe right after the communist revolution. And these guys were gambling in this gambling hall, and they had this dice game where they had like six dice inside of a cup, like a ceramic cup. And they shake the dice and go...
Lift it up,
and then
you see that in bars.
Up and down, up and down. Oh, you do, huh?
Yeah.
That looked like a really cool game. I don't know how to play.
Yeah, I don't remember that game either. I played it like once or twice when I was really drunk at a bar. But like, generally speaking, that's like a baijiu, like the rice wine.
Yeah.
You always drink that when you play it. And I can't really handle that. But so
no one can even explain how it works.
I don't,
they're always so
I guess
drunk
so.
When they're
I don't know. And like none of my Chinese friends really play it. But yeah, it's. I think it's like a pretty simple game, as most drunk games are. You know, can't be too complicated or the game will end too soon.
It's true. Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, I guess we have bar dice at home, too. Like, yeah. Wisconsin's famous for that. And you get to, like, if you're in, like, a real towny-type bar, like a hole-in-the-wall place, you can ask the bartender if he wants to play dice with you. And if you win the game, then he'll buy you, quote-unquote, buy you a drink.
Right.
Which means, like, pour you one.
Yeah.
And if you lose, then you got to buy the round.
Yeah. But I, like, you don't really see, like, drinking games that much generally outside of that here.
Right.
Like, it's not, but, like, you know, I think because you have enough Chinese going to American universities and stuff, like, I don't know, I've seen Chinese bars hosting, like, beer pong tournaments and stuff.
Oh, you have?
It's, like, oh, okay. More so in Shanghai than here. Huh.
Well, drinking's kind of like almost like the backwards from our culture. Like in our culture, when you're young, you drink a lot, and then you taper it off as you get older. And in China, it's almost like you ramp it up as you get older. Like, the middle-aged men, they just get obliterated.
Yeah.
And they're, like, you know, 60 years old, and they're just...
Yeah, most of my young Chinese friends, like, really don't drink very much.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a big thing.
Yeah.
It's a little strange on kind of the world scale.
Yeah.
Hmm. So when you travel, how do you like to travel? Do you like to live it up, spend a lot of money?
Stay in hostels? Usually I stay in hostels and then I spend big money on food and experiences.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I like to not spend too much money. So to me, like, generally speaking, like, a hotel or something is not going to really give you that much about, like, what the experience of being there is, or, like, the people. You know, especially the more expensive of a hotel you're at, the more that they're just going to, you know, kiss your ass and eat. Like, you know, I lived in Costa Rica before, and, like, everybody would tell me, oh my god, everybody in Costa Rica is so amazingly nice and blah 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 blah. And, you know, of course that was, like, them staying at 3- and 4-star resorts.
Oh,
so
my driver,
like,
was so great. And
yeah,
my tour,
well,
guide,
you're paying
he was
them,
awesome.
Like, come on, like, yeah. You know, especially if you're an American and you're tipping, and most, like, people who are coming there are not from America, then, like, you are golden to them. And they will treat you like, you know, like a king.
Yeah, Americans are notorious over tippers.
Yeah.
I mean, we tip like no one else in the world.
But you have, I don't know. I mean, I forgot where we were going.
Oh, well, we're talking about the hotel situation.
Yeah. So, like, hostels, like, you actually get to know a lot of times the local people a little bit more. I know, like, when I was in the Philippines once, I was staying at this hostel and almost nobody was there, and I ended up getting invited over to, like, the hostel owner's friend's house for, like, a pig roast. So, like, sometimes, like, you get a little bit more on the local level staying at hostels. But, you know, I don't also really understand that much, like, people who go and travel and then they just eat, like, ramen noodles or, like, spaghetti sauce out of a can every night in the hostel. Yeah. Because I guess for me, like, one of the things that I love the most about traveling is getting to try out so many different foods. Like, we think in America that we can get food from anywhere, and in the world standard, we are really spoiled for choice. But there are so many kinds of foods that you just don't experience unless you're there, and so I want to experience, like, all different levels of that food. Like, I want the high end stuff a little bit. I can be a little frou-frou, but I also like the street food, you know. So usually when I'm traveling, I try to have, you know, one meal at least at, like, a nice restaurant that has, like, a good reputation.
Oh, yeah.
And I also like expensive hobbies like scuba diving, which is actually manageably expensive in Asia. Or, like, you know, I'll do some kind of nature explorations and stuff, but a lot of times I will take a guide if it's available. Or, like, in Malaysia when I was climbing Kinabalu, like, you have no other option. So I'm willing to, like, pay up for the experiences and for food, but, like, for accommodation, a lot of times I just try to make that the cheaper aspect. And for transportation and stuff, like, I'll try to get the cheapest and do local transportation, public transportation, if it's not too much of a pain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I found, like, the less you spend on some of these things, the more you get out of it.
Yeah.
Like, hotels, I totally feel that way. I mean, I just stayed for, like, a month in this little hostel in Yunnan called Horsepen 46. And I actually did a couple podcasts there. I did one with two of the owners. It's like Carol and Feifei, shout out. And they were awesome. And they're like not from there, but they're Chinese. And they taught me a lot about their cultures from their different parts of China. And I just had such a great time there. Like, it was kind of like this little family that lives there. And like guests came like every day, a couple new people came in. And like a couple of people stayed longer. Some people stayed just a day. And it was such a great time.
So. Yeah, and I mean, I think if you are in hostels or smaller places, then you're more likely to actually meet people. You know, if I'm just going by myself or, like, with one or two friends, like, it can be way more fun to stay in some place that has more communal spaces and people aren't just, like, kind of huddling off and doing their own thing.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but I think I am starting to get to the point that occasionally I just want a nice place. I've never been a resort person.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this last trip that I took to Thailand, like, you know, I think sometimes when you're always trying to go the route where you're doing the hostels and you're trying to do things the cheap way, like, if a couple things go wrong, it can all just like fall apart, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, whereas if you're not doing it as backpackery, you can like be guaranteed that you're going to have like a couple really nice days. So, you know, for us, me and my friend Christy, we went to Thailand and, you know, the weather didn't work out and like we didn't end up getting to scuba dive very much because of like the location that we were at. And
where
we had
you?
Looked up online. We were in Krabi area, okay. Riley Beach. And there's only one scuba diving company. And we kept on like putting down our down payment and then not enough people would sign up and we wouldn't get to go. And then when we could go, like, we got food poisoning, and, like, then we were like, okay, we're just gonna spend a day at the beach, yeah, this isn't working out, whatever, and then it rained, you know, and, like, God, when we had food poisoning, we were staying in this little place that was, like, you know, no electricity between 6 and 6, and it was hot, and just, like, vomiting in a little kind of unclean toilet in a place with no electricity or air conditioning is just miserable. So we just ended up forking out the cash to get something that was like a little more comfortable.
Those kind of situations, if you like, if you just have a door that's like solid on your bathroom, it like really improves things.
Yes, yes. Yeah, one of the worst experiences I've ever had was having like violent diarrhea at this hostel, and the bathroom was so small that like you had to hold the door closed if you were anything over like 5'4" because your knees would like keep the door from closing.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah. So sometimes you're just like, oh God, I just want the comfort. Like,
yeah.
Just give me the comfort, you know?
Sometimes.
And like with hosteling, like if you're in different places, you're just getting information from the internet. Sometimes like little places, they're not even advertised. So the place we originally intended to stay, in Thailand, we hadn't seen any update for like a year on it, but we're like, they said, oh, you can try to call, but they don't really answer their phones and they don't take any online bookings. So you just show up and it's never full. And we walked and walked and walked to get up to this place only to find it completely abandoned.
Oh, so,
like, it was, yeah. I mean, that's like, that's the thing. Sometimes you like swing and miss when you're doing the budget thing and it makes you like kind of wish that you would fork out a little bit more. But then ultimately, most of the time when you travel and you're not quite as concrete and you're open to possibilities and you go a little bit more local, you can end up with way more authentic experiences. But
yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I tend to go for the cheapest thing always, and sometimes that burns me, you know?
Yeah.
But I kind of like the challenge of it, though, like the, just doing things on my own versus having always having a driver or something.
You know? Yeah. And one of the things that I like most about traveling to other countries, it's like, it's not like going to all the big sites or, you know, it's, I kind of like the way that things work differently, seeing how people make do with what they have or like, you know, their little solutions to problems. I mean, when I lived in Costa Rica, you would just see like so many jerry-rigged things everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that more in rural China as well, but like people getting really creative with coming up with solutions or, you know, oh, we don't have like functioning windshield wipers in the rainy season. Well, just, you know, throw your brother out the window with a broom and like, yeah, right. You know, just like seeing people figuring it out and surviving and like, and you know, you do get a perspective on things, how some things could be so much easier and more efficient, like where you're from. Oh, yeah. And then you also appreciate how, like, in the United States, for the most part, yeah, you might pay a premium for things, but they work.
Right. They actually stay together.
Yes.
Like, when I replace this hose leading to my shower head, I mean, I think it's going to last, the new one is going to last 2-3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, if that. So hopefully, we're not really going to be there about that long, so hopefully it lasts till we move out.
Yeah.
It's going to cost about $2, $3, but it's not going to last long. And anything household items, just they just don't last here.
No.
It just breaks so fast.
And sometimes, too, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like you'll even see that in, like, our school. They'll sometimes purchase things that, like, they could just spend a little bit more money and have something that was, like, way better and would last longer. But it's always, like, a little bit short-term, like, thinking. And that's something here that you see kind of everywhere, but in some ways, I mean, like, everything is turning over, everything is changing so fast that, like, in some instances, I think that that's okay, or it's, like,
profitable. Yeah, there's almost no point in having things that are going to last a long time.
Yeah.
It's going to be all torn down anyway.
Right.
But, like, there were a lot of things coming here that I was prepared for just because it's just common knowledge. Like, there's a lot of people in China. Like, duh. Like, Beijing is polluted. Okay. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
What I was not ready for and what kind of shocked me the most was the absolute lack of any, like, long-term planning or thought that goes into infrastructure or purchasing things.
Like, you see this huge shopping center over here that, you know, is not really interesting enough for the amount of time we've given it, but they have this road that goes down by it, and it is like nothing but a little unmarked road. It doesn't have like lanes really designated out, and it could be like a 4-lane road, but instead, even though they have some parking garages in the, you know, within the mall, like, it doesn't seem like anybody uses them, and everybody just parks in clusterfucks on the street.
Right.
And like there's no reason why that's as busy and messy as it is. Like, they knew that they were going to have thousands upon thousands of people living above the stores. They knew that people were going to be coming and shopping at these places, but it's just like, do whatever is needed to get it open and then worry about everything else later.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the Donald Trump version of things. Like,
I guess just so. Just fuck shut it all through up. And
just,
like,
just get it. Just put it out there. Whatever's wrong, we'll fix it later.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it is here with everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and that mall, it's not like there's it's not like there's piece of shit cars and stuff. Like, these are rich people.
Yeah.
They're driving Maseratis and Mercedes and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just jamming their cars right in the road, and who knows what bicycles are gonna, you know, ding their doors and all this
doesn't
stuff.
Matter.
Yeah, it's a little. That was probably the most shocking thing to me.
Just right.
Experiencing
and,
this.
Like, you have, I don't know, it's just like so many. I guess they don't always know because there are all these like ghost towers and stuff, but you have all of these like skyscrapers out here, like high rise apartment complexes. And if they were actually filled up, then it would just be a total nightmare out here with traffic, especially because everybody is driving cars out here. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there just isn't the long-term thinking.
Or they think about like the building, but they don't think about all the things that are affected because the building is there.
Right.
Yeah, like the roads. And like,
yeah.
Okay, these things are all connected.
Yeah.
But the thinking is not connected whatsoever.
Yeah.
I don't know. So you lived in Costa Rica. Now, did you live in a city there?
No. Tiny, tiny, tiny town. I definitely went from like pure jungle to concrete jungle. There were, I think, 2,000 in the little town that I was in, and then on the peninsula as a whole, like maybe a few thousand more. Huh. The town was surrounded by a national park.
Oh, that's right. You were on the Osa Peninsula?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
Near Corcovado National Park.
Oh, that's a beautiful place.
So, yeah, it is absolutely beautiful, but it was a little bit difficult to live there. It was so tiny. I actually had way less culture shock moving to China than moving there. But granted, this is my second, you know, country that I'm living in other than, you know, the motherland. So I think some things that would have bothered me in China, I'd already, like, had to adapt and kind of just be like more relaxed about things. So when I got here, you know, maybe there were different challenges and stuff, but it was...
Were the culture shock things related to just being in a small town?
I think that definitely is part of it. But I think also with that area, it's like a lot of it was rural, living in a small town type of things. But, you know, there were similar issues there where, like, things just did not work. You know, things were, you know, they would get a lot of the really low quality imports that, like, they don't even import in the United States. And you couldn't get, like, the nicer versions of them. So everything would break there that you would buy. Oh,
so that totally prepared you for China.
Yeah. So that was like something. And, you know, where I lived, like most of the adults didn't have like more than a late elementary school education. There was like that aspect where, you know, you go to a store and you pay like 1,000 colones for something that costs 500 and they're still putting it in the calculator. That's not everybody. Not like everybody there for certain, but it, you know, if you have like people who are living in this tiny little town in the middle of nowhere and they don't have like a lot of education and people aren't coming in and out of it, then you don't, I don't know. They're just like certain things that are a lot harder.
Like they're not exposed that much to the outside world.
Right. And I mean, I think that, like in China, they are a little bit more familiar, honestly, with us than the Costa Ricans were.
Really?
Like, of Americans. I don't know. Like, I hugely felt like an outsider. And again, that could be small town stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, and also being in a place where there was a fair amount of tourism, you know, there weren't really Westerners there for that many reasons. A lot of them owned tourist type businesses. And I think that there had been a lot of like negative repercussions from foreigners being there. So
That's
I don't know,
bad.
You know, and I always got like the gringo price for everything, even when they knew that I taught their children and had been there for a while, you know, so I really felt like not a part of things. And there were certainly like welcoming people and kind people, but it was tough.
Yeah, that always got me, like traveling through Latin America. Like it just grated on me after a while when the prices are always higher for you because you're an outsider. And
to some degrees, I mean, like, I don't have this, like, huge problem with it if it's, like, a tourist. Because to some degree, like, the prices of things in Costa Rica, at least, like, are hugely inflated because of the tourist economy and because they relax so many regulations to encourage people to come and retire there. I mean, the currency there is so, I mean, all the prices are so inflated. If you cross into Nicaragua or Panama, everything is like drastically cheaper.
Yeah.
So I can understand like charging the outsiders a bit more to be able to charge the local people less, because it's insane how expensive things are for what people make.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not
saying
that.
But if you're, if you're, like, living there and you're on a salary that's pretty comparable to theirs, and then you're getting that outsider price.
That's tough. I mean, I'm not blaming anyone for, like, trying to charge as much as they think the person's willing to pay.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think, like, at home, it's just so much less stressful, like, when there's a price tag on the thing.
Right, right, right.
Here's what it's going to cost. Okay.
And that's one reason why I still don't like going into Chinese markets very much.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm pretty good at, like, haggling, and I try to make sure that I know what the value of something is roughly, and, like, just keep it real with them a little bit. But if you go in naively, even if you think, like, oh, I brought them down, like, half of what they originally said, like, you still, right. You know, the thing that you know, if you were had, you know that you have been had if they, like, rush to give you tons of business cards and tell all your friends to come.
Yeah.
Like, they'll tell you, like, oh, like, you're taking food off my children's table. Oh, like, you know, they'll give those, like, nuclear options of bargaining techniques.
Yes.
And then you feel like, oh, okay, like, and then you'll pay it, and then they'll be like, oh, tell your friends about it, here's a million cards.
Right, suddenly the mood changes.
And you're just like, oh, no, I lost so hard.
the worst is when you're, like, let's say they offer you 100 for whatever it is, and you're like, how about 50? And they go, okay, like, right away.
Yeah.
That's such a horrible feeling.
You're like, actually, I don't know.
Oh, I didn't really mean that.
Yeah. Oh, I meant 15.
Yeah.
15.
Yeah, 1-5. Yes. Oh, boy. But I notice, like, maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems like in Latin American markets, like, if let's say the first price is 100, maybe you knock them down to, like, 85 or 80 or something, and that'd be kind of normal. But in China, at least for, like, the pearl market and some of these really aggressive places, you got to go down to, like, 15 for 100.
Yeah.
Like, if you're paying 20, you're overpaying.
Right. Yeah, I've heard, like, generally, like, offer as your first price 10% of whatever they say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. But also, like, if you're in a small place in Latin America, like, a lot of times, I mean, I know I would have to go into Panama fairly frequently. And after I got off this ferry, there was a bus that came like every hour and was so slow to get to the border, or you could take a cab. And I mean, they had a little monopoly. I was saying like mafia monopoly.
Yeah.
You know, amongst the cab drivers, where like they all just at some point would decide like, nope, this is the new price. And like, they would all agree to it, and none of them would break from that and go down. I guess, you know, maybe it would be like they were a scab if they
unionizing.
If they accepted less, but like, oh yeah, but I'd be the gringo cost was insanely high.
Really?
Compared to what the local cost was.
Yeah, that's just such a it's just a bad feeling. It always leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah,
for sure.
Hmm.
But now you went into Nicaragua too. I mean, I remember my first day going there, like the day before I had been in San Jose, and it was like,
which dumpiest, like, people talk about, like, you know, China or whatever, like, dirty, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that place is dirty.
Yeah. I mean, Costa Rica, honestly, like, was one of my least favorite countries just because it's so touristy and there's just so regulated. And
yeah.
But not that I stayed. I only stayed a couple weeks, so I don't know. I didn't give it that much of a chance.
There, I mean, there's lots of really great places there. But I think, like, in terms of money, you can get similar experiences in Nicaragua or Panama.
Yeah,
or
and, like,
much less.
There were nice cars in, like, Costa Rica. And, there's just nicer stuff, like, Americanized things. And then as soon as I crossed the border into Nicaragua, it's, like, horse and buggy.
Yeah.
Just everything got knocked down, like, 20 notches on the wealth scale. It's really crazy, the difference in wealth between those two countries. It's just like shocking you immediately.
But I mean, you, from what I talked to, like, people who had been in Costa Rica or Central America for a while, they were saying, like, you know, in terms of development or westernization or, like, the number of foreigners that are there, that, like, Panama is, like, 5 or 10 years behind. And, like, yeah, Nicaragua is, like, coming up. As, you know, that's even being talked about as, like, a retirement, you know, destination. Or, like, they're definitely, you know, trying to get more development. And there's that Chinese, like, Panama Canal kind of thing going on in Nicaragua.
Oh, that's
they're trying
right.
to build a second canal.
I thought that got shut down, though.
I'm not sure. Huh. I mean, I think it's kind of a wild idea because it's so much more engineering than even the Panama Canal.
It's crazy. But... Well, the original Panama Canal, I don't think that was the original location. I think they were going to build it in Nicaragua or maybe Costa Rica, but the government wasn't really up for it.
Yeah.
But then Panama, if I remember my history right, Panama was part of Colombia at the time. And it wasn't going to work there either. And so we sponsored some groups to overthrow the government. Basically,
yeah.
To rebel.
Doesn't surprise
created
me.
Created a new country of Panama that was friendly to the American government.
Yeah. And well, and I mean, the Americans were, like, the last ones in who, like, nabbed what was already done and finished it off. So, like, because we weren't the ones who started it. I think it was the French.
Oh, in Panama?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We did not start the canal. I don't remember the whole... I went to the canal. It was, you know, I learned a little bit, but I've forgotten a lot of the historical fact. But, yeah, I mean, you can go and watch. And did you go there?
Yeah, I watched it. I felt like...
I expected it to, like, be more, like, magnificent or, like, astounding, you know. But, like, you, it's just, like, you see, like, a little channel... That's, like, got metal on the sides and...
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought like that. I'm like, oh, this thing is actually not that big. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of these, what are they called? The Miraflores locks?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a little small. But then a ship came in
and I started like, thinking about it. It actually fits.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that fits perfectly. And the ship is designed exactly to fit the canal.
Oh, right, yeah. They're like, oh, well, we can only build it this big.
It's called Panamax, I learned later.
What, the size standard?
Yeah, the standard is called Panamax. Oh. And so ships are built to that standard. If they ever want to go through the canal.
Yeah.
And then I was, like, looking at this ship and just watching it, like, in real time, it's not that cool. But when you think about how it can raise up, like, a five-story building, the height of a five-story building, in, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they put that much water in it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. This is, like,
it is
amazing.
Like, it is really, like, a marvel when you think about it, but visually it is not as... Like, and they kind of have that, like, fanfare-y thing, because as the boat comes in, they're giving you the, you know, the kind of commentary on what's happening blah, 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 blah.
And it is, like, a slow-moving process, but when you step back and think about what went into that, that's actually, like, really cool.
I think, wasn't in Les Mis... Wasn't he going the...
Oh, don't ask me about Les Mis.
I think I like, know. I think he was going to work on the canal.
Ah, okay.
Like, the Russell Crowe character. I mean, that makes me sound horrible because I studied French and I'm, like, referring to the film, the movie. But, yeah, I think, like, his penal colony was at the canal. But that could just be total imagination.
Boy, that's one area where I have no...
We gotta fact check that.
I have no clue. Well, I do have show notes for this podcast.
Yeah.
We'll do fact checking.
Yeah.
Well, which reminds me, we've been going a long time.
Yep.
We ought to call it a day.
Yeah, I drank all that coffee and it's time.
Oh, it's catching up to you.
Yes, yes.
Well, I don't want to have to sit here and talk to myself while you're peeing, so...
Yeah.
So let's wrap it up.
Yeah.
Do you have any sage wisdom for the listeners at home? I kind of put you on the spot there.
Go see the world!
Yeah, whatever your situation is, make a way. Make a way for it to happen.
Yeah.
Go see the world.
Or even go see some places in your own country that you never even thought about, because you can learn a lot from even... your own culture.
Even in your own city.
Seeing it from another angle. Yeah.
Absolutely. Just take a walk. Go through your city and see something that you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Sean.
Thank you.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I really appreciate all of your support. Thanks for telling your friends about the show. And I want to thank my guest, Sean, for coming on. I think that was an awesome and interesting conversation. I have a website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number, 1000daysbetween.com. And if you go there, you can look at the show notes for this episode, where I'll have links to all of the stuff we talked about, and I'll put up a few pictures for you. And of course, I also have my blog on that very same website, so I put up a lot of pictures and write about my travels. Thanks for checking it out, and I'll see you next time.